All right, everybody. So we're bouncing around. I apologize for the whiplash. We moved from the 1870s to the 1980s. Now we are retreating into the 1950s, which a wonderful historian, Larry Grossman, has talked about it as and written about as the lean years of American orthodoxy. What he means is that something happens between the beginning of World War II and the, I'll use a more of an academic word than anything else, the triumphalism of the 1960s and 1970s, where American orthodoxy obtains a level of self-confidence. Almost in some cases, a type of saber rattling, something of a machoism or an ego that says, you know, we belong and we're here. That wasn't the case always. The 1950s was really a time in which many predicted, as I'll share some materials, that Orthodox Judaism in the United States would go out of business. There were those grim predictions. And Hermann Woke was, you know, usually I don't speak in absolute terms, but I will in this case. It's hard to make an argument, in my view, against the following. Hermann Woke was is the best known American who was an Orthodox Jew. He was not known because he was an Orthodox Jew. He was known for being a Pulitzer Prize winner, Caine Mutiny. Cover that. But his outward embrace of orthodoxy wasn't yet a term called modern orthodoxy until the 1960s, and particular institutions within the orbit of Orthodox Judaism became this moment, not unlike in general American Judaism when Arthur Miller marries Marilyn Monroe. And she converts to Judaism. And many folks look at, oh my goodness, we've got Marilyn Monroe. That type of feeling, the Sandy Koufax-like feeling that that there was a celebrity who represented me was an incredibly empowering impulse for American Orthodoxy. And by studying Woke, particularly when he does decide to become a professional Jew, he publishes a book called This Is My God in 1959. We're going to look at the reception history of it. American Orthodox Jews couldn't be happier. We've made it. Hermann Woke is writing about us. In the 1940s, Woke was in the Navy, was stationed in the Pacific. How he got the idea for the Caine Mutiny court-martial. And he delivers a speech before his fellow naval officers, and he republishes it in the Orthodox Union, which was then the leading, the monthly magazine of, you guessed it, the Orthodox Union. He writes the following. You're right. He also spoke out the following. Your father and my father used different rites and historical symbols, not just speaking to Jews in the Navy, speaking to everybody. But surely both religions are pathways to one true God, our Father in heaven, the God of the Ten Commandments. Therefore, surely we can speak of this to each other. Before then, he speaks out against a certain level of atheism. And this was really, really important in World War II. This was a time in which there was a renewed religious spirit. It would go into full bloom in the 1950s because in the Cold War, the Soviets were the non-believers and America were the devout. And so it behooved America, perhaps in the Cold War, not perhaps, but absolutely, to display their religion. But it really happened in the 1940s. Think about the myth of the four chaplains, the two Protestant, one Catholic, and one rabbi who give up their spots in the lifeboat as the German U-boat has sunk their ship. That is symbolic of this new fealty renewed fealty for religion. And Woke is feeling that certainly on his ship in the Pacific. He has left religion aside. In fact, we see this in 1945. His rabbi, Rabbi Leo Jung, the rabbi of the Jewish Center in Manhattan, Jung writes to him in 45. This seems to me to be the crux of the problem. At present, you are living in an environment which renders a complete Torah true program very difficult, if not impossible. Torah true, Leo Jung, who was British, was very much a devotee of Rabbi Samson and Raphael Hirsch. Didn't study with Hirsch, but that view. Torah Troya is a dead giveaway that somebody is locked in Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch's Torahim Derech Eretz philosophy. But when you come back, you will have to make up your mind once and for all. So he's writing to his this young pupil, Columbia educated naval officer, Jung reprimands once and for all whether you want to travel the path of Torah to Judaism with its responsibilities, inconveniences, and possible handicaps in your career. You want to be a writer, you're a very talented one. You've already started working for radio programming, Herman. Well, you got to make a decision, or whether you want to retain an emotional appreciation of Jewish faith and an attitude of appeasement and partial conformity. Knowing you as I do, I seem to think that if you permit yourself to be the play ball of conflicting emotions, rather than decide once and for all on abiding loyalty to the Din Torah, you will not achieve that inner sincerity which I know you are seeking. So Woke is a Baal Tshuva. That's an anachronism to some extent. But he's really thinking both in terms of with his fellow Navy shipmen, but also with his own rabbi about his own religious feelings in the middle of, towards the end, in this case, of World War II. Later on, in a Jubilee volume celebrating Leo Jung, edited by his successor, Rabbi Norman Lamm, and his son-in-law, Leonard Rosenfeld, as well as Menachem Kasher, Tor Shlema, I read the work referring to Rabbi Hirsch's writings and his chavruta's study with Rabbi Jung, and was overawed in its learning and zeal, neither of which I felt I could possibly match. It seemed the height of presumption for me to think of following in the path of Hirsch. At the same time, Dr. Jung had planted a thought in my mind. The thought grew in time to be the book called This Is My God. I was 13 years bringing off the task. It gives me pleasure to acknowledge here the debt I owe to Rabbi Jung, not only for a long process of education and for an invaluable editorial review, but for the original suggestion for This Is My God. It was born the book that we're going to study today. We're not going to study the book. I'm going to read a couple of excerpts. But the idea of of Hermann Woke as a pivotal figure. I don't really think about it this way. I think usually about rabbis and philanthropists, but educators. But Hermann Woke, and here he is speaking at Yeshiva University, which he taught at YU, Yeshiva College. He really does. He is almost called to action by Rabbi Jung during his time of uncertainty in World War II, and these are the formative stages that make Hermann Woke that figure. Now, what really makes Hermann Woke is the Cain Mutiny, for which he wins a Pulitzer Prize. Here is original copy of Hermann Woke's The Cain Mutiny. The play, it becomes a Broadway show, and then finally, starring Humphrey Bogart, it becomes a feature film. It makes Hermann Woke into a very, very wealthy man. He now owns several homes. Humphrey Bogart will do that for you. Interest, a little sidebar is that Woke on his on the scribbles of one of the manuscripts held at Columbia University's archives writes on the frontispiece of the manuscript for the Caine Mutiny, Yiftach Bidoro Kishmuel Bidoro, a statement found in Rosh Hashanah, in other locations. What it means is, Yiftach, who clearly wasn't, was one of the judges, but not up to the stature of Shmuel, in his generation, if all you got is a Yiftach, you don't have a Samuel, you don't have a Shmuel, you're stuck with Yiftach, he's still your rabbinic authority. Every generation is entitled and deserves the rabbinic leadership that they have. Rabbi Herschel Schachter tells at Parshashir on Thursdays, at least for the 5 years that I was there, always tells the story that when he was an undergrad in Herman Wolf's literature class, he claimed that the Caine Mutiny, and I'll explain a little bit about what the Caine Mutiny, if you've seen A Few Good Men, it was riffing off of the Caine Mutiny. But he claimed that the Caine Mutiny was based on a Rashi in Parshat Shoftim, where the pasuk tells us, "Lo tasori aminu small, you shall not deviate to the right and to the left." Rashi quotes the Sifrei. Yes, some of you will point out Ramban, Nachmanides disagrees with Rashi's interpretation, but even if Rashi writes there based on the Sifrei, that even if the rabbis tell you that right is left and left is right, you still have to follow them. And so the purpose. So the story about the Caine Mutiny is where Captain Queeg is in the Caine, the USS Caine, is in the middle of the ocean in the Pacific, and it's going through a storm. And essentially, Bogart's character, Captain Queeg, has a panic attack and hides. And the next ranking officers guide the USS Caine to safety. And the balance of the book turned Broadway show turned movie is about the obligation versus the responsibility for those officers to save the ship but disobey basically the mutiny of Captain Queeg, whether or not they should have let the ship go down in deference to their shell-shocked Captain Queeg, is this interesting philosophical question. So that's where, whether it's the tradition that he drew it from that Rashi, or the scribble that he writes on the manuscript held at Columbia University, either way, Herman Wolk was influenced to some degree, certainly by his service in World War II, but also by his learning, likely with Rabbi Jung. Wolk doubles down on his commitment to becoming this symbol of this Orthodox Renaissance. The YU commentator, the Yeshiva College undergraduate newspaper, invites him as part of a series to, you see over here, for the past 6 months, the Caine Mutiny has enjoyed distinction being number one in the fiction bestseller list and has recently been nominated for the Pulitzer Prize for which it won. And they invited, therefore, Herman Wolk, who was then teaching a class there, about how to balance Judaism and Western civilization. I mentioned Rabbi Jung, so makes sense to mention Wolk's next rabbi, though he would move to Long Island. He stayed very, very close with Rabbi Norman Lamb. Rabbi Lamb, in his sermons, I downloaded this from his sermon database on the Yad Norman Lamb, just a terrific, amazing, amazing resource. He several times mentions Herman Wolk in his sermons at the Jewish Center. Thank God the tendency of conformism is letting up just a bit in recent days. Not only are ordinary Jews in New York and out of town daring to be different by sending their children in increasing numbers to day schools. Wolk was a proponent of day schools and synagogues in Long Island, and themselves turning to traditional Orthodox Judaism, Orthodox synagogues, excuse me, but even some great American Jews are of this kind nowadays. Last year, it was my pleasure to lunch with Herman Wolk, the Pulitzer Prize author of Caine Mutiny, who is a devout, pious Orthodox Jew. He told me a remarkable story worth repeating and remembering. So here, Rabbi Lamb is migrating Wolk's celebrity into his drushot. The summer before he had been aboard ship sailing for Rome, looking at the passenger list, he noticed the name of Shalom Ash, the author who strayed from the Jewish fold. He looked him up in the cabin and invited him in to lunch with him in a kosher kitchen. "You eat kosher, Mr. Woke?" asked the older man. "Why, certainly, I'm an Orthodox Jew." "Surprising," said Ash. "In my days, a young author was a revolutionary, a rebel, who rose up against tradition and society and blazed new trails. How come you conform to tradition, Woke?" "You're mistaken," answered Herman Woke. "You see, I am a revolutionary and nonconformist too." Fascinating. So Woke positions himself very deliberately as this phalanx of traditional Judaism. And maybe for that reason, he doesn't, you know, he died, I think, at 101 a couple of years ago. Probably for that reason, Woke was likely held back from the ranks of the Philip Roths and the Saul Bellows to some extent, I imagine. The general press took note. Nothing was bigger at the time in the media as Time magazine in 1955, when he authors Marjorie Morningstar again about Jewishness. It's the first real discussion in fiction about lavish bar mitzvahs. "Woke, a man of paradox," writes Time magazine, "seems like an enigmatic character in search of an author. He is a devout Orthodox Jew who has achieved worldly success in worldly wise Manhattan while adhering to dietary prohibitions and traditional rituals, which may with many of his fellow Jews find embarrassing. He is an ex-radio gag writer who severely judges his own work by the standards of great English novels." It's true. In his correspondence, Woke would ask his secretary to buy and send him copies of all of the latest novels. "He is a Columbia educated, class 34, well-read intellectual with an abiding faith in the common reader. They're good enough to elect our president, aren't they? Although he is a highly sensitive member of a religious minority, he is one of the few living U.S. writers who carries no chip on his shoulder and who gives the U.S. straight A's in his fictional report card, which is important during the Cold War. He is not critiquing. He is not a communist. He is full-bred American, and he is full-on Orthodox Jew. In a speech he delivered in 1959, the same year that This Is My God was published, this is on the back cover of My Yeshiva College, which I think some people on this call contributed essays to. Woke, it's on the back cover, it was authored by my good friend Menachem Butler and Zev Nagel. The students of the college are meddlesome, overburdened, skeptical. Here you also get a taste of his writing, just there's a whimsy, it's whimsy, and fertile and sharp questions. They move from one learning discipline to another like amphibians. Microbiology, 1 hour, he's very close to Rabbi Tedler. Cairo's Code, the next, referring to Shulchan Aruch. A heavy Talmud session, a seminar on Shakespeare, geology on the third floor, Maimonides on the second. Doesn't really function like that at Yeshiva College back then, but you get the point. That is how it goes. The contradictions are not lost on the boys. They made their instructors. It's also important to note that Stern College for Women was just founded a number of years ago, so the attention on Yeshiva was still very much on the young men, not the women. They made their instructors sweat sometimes, the high professors of the Talmud as well as the English teachers, but they get the work done. And they play league basketball, and they have tremendous bull sessions about Marx and Kierkegaard, and possibly women, and they sleep through the morning chapel call. That was actually an issue. Where Yeshiva College instituted mandatory attendance and davening, and they fight the house masters, and they have incisive debates over fine points of Hebrew law, and most of them go on to the professions or to business. Only a few become rabbis. So this is my God. I have a copy in my house. It was republished many times over, but that's the original. That's what the original binding looks like. Let me take a quick second. Just to answer some questions. So we've said a lot. And we'll take some questions at the end. Right. So Woke was a celebration. Yeah. Thank you, Zmira. Woke was read by everybody. Did Woke grow up in an observant home? It's hard to tell from his writing, but my understanding is yes, he did. Incorrect. His book, he speaks about it, the tradition of his grandfather. Absolutely right. Yeah, that is the etymology of his name, but I think most people pronounce it Woke. Anyway, This Is My God. This Is My God is a manual on Jewish living. That was really, really popular. This is the era of mindfulness and Book of the Month clubs, and people are writing on how-to books. Before you had YouTube, DIY, you had this whole industry of self-help books. Herman Woke decides to move from fiction to nonfiction with This Is My God, and it's a primer on Jewish holidays, on dietary restrictions. Most reviewers, though, got caught up on page 248. Because until then, Woke, who is autobiographical, speaks about his European grandfather, speaks a little bit about his return to Orthodox Judaism. He doesn't out himself as an Orthodox Jew, surely. He's speaking on behalf of all Jews, although the book is titled, This Is My God. He's leveraging his own celebrity, saying it's worthwhile for you, reader, dear reader, to understand my God. Here he takes almost a parenthetical break from the discussion in the middle of the book to acknowledge his orthodoxy. So orthodoxy and dissent, and every reader almost to a T seizes on these paragraphs. Between the dissenting movements on the one hand and the large and various bodies of orthodoxy on the other, there is at present a sort of polite peace. The anathemas of the 19th century have died away. Naturally, the contest for minds, or at least for memberships, is keen under the amicable surface, especially in the suburban frontier in the 1950s. Many people come back from World War II armed with the GI Bill, which would give tuition relief for an undergraduate degree. It's how many universities really became bolstered after World War II, but also very inexpensive mortgage rates. A lot of folks would come back from service in World War II, and they would look for homes in the suburbs. Well, there wasn't a Jewish infrastructure there. And very often, Gordon has in his book on Jews in the Suburbs, Jeffrey Gurak, my teacher, has written about this. Very often, when enough of a cluster of Jews would find themselves together in the suburbs, they would invite leaders from all the different movements, from JTS, Jewish Theological Seminary, Conservative, Hebrew Union College, Reform, Yeshiva University, Orthodox. They would invite them all to a forum to basically a debate. And with much on the line, where these young families would assemble these forums, and they would ask the different movements, the different religious movements in American Judaism, to basically give them a pitch. And the winner, whoever won, that group would say, yeah, sure, we'll be Orthodox, we'll be Reform, we'll be Conservative. Because of its middle of the road in perspective of Reform and Orthodoxy, Conservative Judaism won more than the others, if we could say that. But that's what he's talking about over here, that they compete. There is some sort of they have the Synagogue Council of America, and you have intra-denominational discussions. But there certainly was a competition for Jewish life, particularly in the suburbs. That there will be a major change in this picture in the near future seems unlikely. Reform cannot admit authority in the Mosaic law without vanishing. The conservatives cannot drop their innovations without merging into orthodoxy. Both dissenting movements, they are the dissenters, there's something about the terminologies, have nationwide plants, temples, divinity schools, Sunday schools, afternoon schools, and large bodies.
Hi, Abigail. How are you?
Make sure.
Abigail? I'm hearing.
Make sure everybody mutes. Will the Orthodox discard their fealty to the law and acknowledge the wisdom of Reform or Conservative improvisations? The time for that would seem to have been in the 19th century. Orthodoxy has survived. Frank Hirsch survived and recovered from the impact of modern dissent. Individuals indeed continue to drift away. There has been a well-known cascading from Orthodox to conservative and from conservative to reform groups. But reform does not swell as it might because of attrition into disinterest and loss of identity. Nor, curiously, does Orthodoxy seem to diminish. It received massive new strength from the refugees of the Hitler terror, and since then it is, if anything, on the rise. The prospect, so far as the eye can see, at least in the United States, is that three denominations will continue for a long time. Now, we'll come back, hold on to that point, because what I'm interested in, not in Woke as historian, because I do think he is painting a far rosier picture of Orthodox Judaism at this time, but his perspective is really interesting. On the next page of personal note, he confesses that he's tried to be fair with reform and conservative, but he's very clear. He outs himself at well known that he was an Orthodox Jew, and then he tackles a word that most people didn't until the 1960s, assimilation, in the next section. He took on some heavy issues. Some numbers, just so that we understand. When it comes out in the fall of 1959, This Is My God ranked 7th on the New York Times nonfiction bestseller list. 7th. By November 30th, so 1 month later, Doubleday publisher sold more than 100,000 books and printed another 75,000 copies to fill store shelves. 2 months later, by the end of the year, December 27th, 1959, This Is My God climbed to number 2nd, only behind Moses Hart's memoir, Act One. Doubleday, the next year, reported sales of 200,000 copies. Reports in the newspapers of flight attendants, of stewardesses, buying a copy at the local kiosk and smuggling and reading it in between beverage service. Just interesting things about letters to Herman Woke about Jews and non-Jews, non-Jews in particular, buying copies for their non-Jewish friends. It became a medium to translate modern Judaism, and for a lot of people, they were upset because for Woke, modern Judaism meant modern Orthodox Judaism. Jerusalem Post reports Woke's mother brings first new book that on a flight, I don't know what it was, TWA or El Al, but Herman Woke's mother deposited the very first copy of This Is My God to Eretz Yisrael. It's a big deal. In the pages of the Boston Globe, the Church of the Redeemer reports that it's actually not on this. I gave you the wrong one, but here the church leadership on the below, it's probably too small to see, I apologize, is interested in having a book club on Herman Woke. Now, this ran against certain sensibilities in American Jewish life. So, for example, here you have, give me 1 second, Marshall Sklar, the great sociologist of American Judaism, writing his first book on conservative Judaism. He writes the following: the failure of adequate adaptation on the part of the traditionalists helped create the pressures which resulted in the development of conservatism. He's writing in 1955. Orthodox adherents have succeeded in achieving the goal of institutional perpetuation to only a limited extent. The history of their movements, so writing in the 1950s about American Orthodoxy, the history of their movement in this country can be written in terms of a case study of institutional decay. Nathan Glazer, in his award-winning book, American Judaism, writes, up to now, also published in the 1950s, up to now I've spoken almost entirely of what is, historically speaking, new in American Jewish life, the reform movement, the conservative movement, the suburban developments. I have said little of what is old, the Orthodox life of the ghettos of the big cities, because indeed there is little to say. It has survived barely, and that we have said. So, the pundits, the anthropologists, are predicting that American Orthodoxy, they're writing in the 1950s, and Woke's 1950s. They're predicting the demise of Orthodoxy. There are people like Solomon Rudman, a rabbi, an Orthodox rabbi in Louisville, Kentucky, who in his sermon volume includes the following. Who would have dared to predict some 50 years ago that Orthodoxy in America would be on the upsurge? Well, nobody is, but Rudman is also not paying attention to that. Nobody still is, other than he and Woke. I have perused the sermons and lectures of yesterday's preachers, and in the majority, I've discovered a pessimistic outlook concerning the survival of Orthodoxy in the United States. Alas, if they could only rise from their everlasting sleep, and behold, the magnificent Orthodox schools of learning, which span the country, they would be ashamed. And that's the state of play. Woke is running against the grain, but his celebrity is becoming an engine of self-confidence at that time. Insiders are noticing that Orthodoxy does have an advantage. One in particular, it's not just Yeshiva University, it's not just the Rabbinic Council of America, it's not just NCSY founded in 1954, but in earnest in 1959, but it's the gay school movement. That there's a spike in gay school movement means that while they may not be robust right now, that the Orthodox day schools are producing the future lay people, whether they become rabbis or limited men in the pews, they're producing a highly literate Orthodox community that will come into formation when these kids, these children, become adults in the 60s and 70s. Emmanuel Feldman writing a review in the pages of Tradition. By the time this review reaches print, this is a review of This Is My God, most of the readers of this journal will have read Woke's book on Judaism. He's writing a review, not trying to encourage people, he does, but assuming that everybody's read it already. He's Herman Woke, after all. If they have not, they should. This volume is a delight to read. Herman Woke, the master storyteller, has become Herman Woke, the master expositor. He is clear, down to earth, and utterly charming. However, others state in a letter to the editor of the LA Times after a very favorable review of This Is My God, this book is limited. May I congratulate the Times, the Los Angeles Times, on the publication of Herman Woke's book, This Is My God. It is excellent that you are rendering a service, section out of review. They are serializing it. Too many people are unfamiliar with some of the basic ideas, customs, and rituals of the Jewish religion. I would like to suggest, however, that the book represents but one phase of the Jewish faith, namely the Orthodox. Hence, it does not express the religious beliefs and practices of all Jews. There are three main groupings among the Jewish religionists: Orthodox, or extremely traditional; Reform, which had its inception in the 19th century; and the conservative, which ranges in between the two. This letter is in no way a reflection on Orthodox Judaism. While I represent the Reform or liberal group, I have the highest respect for anyone who carries out his religious convictions according to his conscience and with real sincerity. I would merely call the attention of your readers to the fact that this book is limited in its viewpoint. Rabbi in Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles, Reform Rabbi Edgar Magnin. So he's very polite. He says, I'm glad for This Is My God, but remember, this is Herman Woke's Orthodox God. Just before I go to the next page, Maurice Lamb, I'm not even sure he was Rabbi Maurice Lamb yet, publishes a book review guide called I Shall Glorify Him, a study guide to Herman Woke's This Is My God, an adult workbook on the vital religious problems of modern Jewry. So here, the Orthodox are producing an infrastructure of how to leverage This Is My God. Use it in your book clubs. Here's a study guide. Here are apparati to figure out how to become more observant and how to absorb Woke's brand of God. The others are not as polite as Rabbi Magnin. writing the Associated Press reports of the discussions held at the Central Conference of American Rabbis, or the Union, or the Hebrew Congregations, rather. Maybe it was the Joint. Here is Maurice Eisendroth, who was one of the leading figures in American reform at the time. If you look on the third column over here, he accused author Herman Wouk of a flippant parody of reform in portions of This Is My God, which Eisendroth quoted as calling Reform Judaism an undemanding religion. This demands and commands, the demands and commands of Reform Judaism comprise the most compelling challenge which men had been called upon to confront. So look, says Eisendroth, Reform Judaism is reacting and is supporting Jews in a modern America and a modern world. Don't
You are not sharing your screen.
is that so? Can everybody see my screen?
Well, we did until a minute ago. I saw your screen when Judy said that she couldn't see your screen. But now I
No, I just, well, that's odd.
I've always seen the screen, even when they were saying you couldn't.
Right?
I
Can
see
everybody
it.
see? You can see
Okay
her?
now. Yep.
Oh, okay. Odd.
Your voice has been breaking up periodically.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. I don't know what that's about. Okay. I'll speak closer. I don't know.
We see it. We've seen it all along.
Seeing all I got. All right. Let me continue on then. Wilkes' view disputed. More reform rabbis are attacking Herman Wouk and a conservative rabbi, Arthur Cohn, writes a review. Undoubtedly, This Is My God is an accurate and comprehensive sketch of Orthodox practice and belief. The holidays are described, the liturgy and the synagogue is rehearsed, the central facts of Jewish history and their relation to Jewish belief are presented. But everything that moves me in Orthodoxy, everything that is precious in the Orthodox mode is omitted. So he says his complaint is, by trying to ubiquitize Orthodoxy as a form of American Judaism, says this conservative rabbi, he hasn't even done justice to Orthodoxy. It was an interesting take. Fast forward to the 1990s for a little bit. Here is a fascinating exchange between Herman Wouk and the great historian Jacob Yaakov Katz. This is in 1995. Dear Professor Katz, this is a letter from an admirer. Recently, I came upon your memoir through my own eyes. It was translated in English by Brandeis University Press. Was enthralled by it and have been reading your work ever since. I have on hand the Shabbos Guide, produced by JPS, and have just finished reading Exclusiveness and Tolerance, all really important works for any really interested in Jewish history. My one regret is that somehow I did not encounter your work sooner. I mean, it's probably meant to read Tradition and Crisis as soon as I can get a hold of it. I'm not entirely unknown in Israel, is the Hebrew University professor Yaakov Katz, but Wouk writing to him. I'm not entirely unknown in Israel as a novelist and a playwright. Several of my works have been translated there, including The Cain Mutiny and The Winds of War. In 1959, I published a short nonfiction work on the Jewish faith called This Is My God, a copy of which I send you herewith. It too was rendered into Hebrew. There is no need for you to read this simple tract. It is, you might say, my calling card. That is his calling card, not the Cain Mutiny. Writes back Katz to Wouk, your letter of September 5th was a delightful surprise. As I mentioned in my introduction of my autobiography, I meant to give an opportunity for those who study my historical books to have an idea about their author's life. If the book brings along new readers for my scholarly works, especially for the caliber of Herman Wouk, it is certainly an additional profit. You do not need introduction. I read your mutiny on its publication, and I think our ways crossed themselves on one occasion of which I shall tell you where and when I see you in Jerusalem. So he says that, stick to Cain mutiny, was his nice way of saying it, perhaps. Then he continues, yours sincerely, Yaakov Katz. So what's happening here? Through Hermann Wolf, we're able to detect the beginning of that rejuvenation of American Orthodoxy, that self-confidence. You know, I mean, it's not unlike how young boys and girls felt in the after during the 1975 World Series with Sandy Koufax abstaining from playing on the high holy days, right? We got woke. That means something else, I guess. Woke, W-O-U-K. We have Hermann Woke, and he's giving us that self-confidence. And I've written a little bit about another cause celeb that happens just 4 years after. This Is My God is the GE College Bowl, which was on CBS and NBC at different times. And there was a team from Yeshiva University. One, the captain was a Stern College student. Shifra Youngrice, who just passed away, I think, a little bit ago, who was bewigged. She was wearing a sheitel at the time. Couldn't really tell. It was very stylish. And the self-confidence that young day school kids I found write to YU, donors as well, saying, oh, my goodness, these kippah-clad young men and this woman, this young woman who's leading, she's married already, leading the cause. And they beat UNLV. They lose the Temple, ironically, to a, it was captained by a Jewish kid, eventually win that season. But the idea that media, oh, of course, Larry Kaplan's here. Larry Kaplan is, I didn't even, see Larry, I didn't even know you're there, and I still talk about you from decades and decades ago. Larry Kaplan's on that team, you can speak to it in a different episode of this. But this idea that Lawrence Kaplan is a major figure in Jewish thought and Jewish history and Jewish philosophy. He's written many, many books. I'd suggest, though, and maybe Larry would agree with me, maybe not, is that more people saw him on the College Bowl then read his essays on Maimonides. And that's really important. The visibility of Orthodoxy is critical. And Hermann Woke is the most visible of Orthodox Jews of the time. When he wins the Pulitzer for the Cain Mutiny and Humphrey Bogart stars in the feature film, that's a really big deal. When he succeeds and he's proudly Orthodox and wears a yarmulke in public, that is a big deal. When he pivots and he writes his next big fictional tome on Marjorie Morningstar and American Jewish sensibilities, although really in the conservative movement and the Orthodox movement, that becomes a really, really big deal. And he follows that up with, this is my God. And oh my God, Woke's God is my God, is an Orthodox God. Even while the pundits like Sclair and like Glaser are predicting doom and the vanishing of American Orthodoxy, Woke gives Orthodox Jews pause and says, you know what? We are going to make it. And they rally around him. Maurice Lamb publishes a book guide for groups to study Woke. Woke becomes a Maimonides almost. Not really, but you get the point. And that becomes, that anticipates a new era of Renaissance in American Orthodoxy, one in which few anticipated it other than Hermann Woke. So stop here. We haven't had time. Some people wrote to me asking to give some time for questions. I apologize if the connection wasn't great. But I'm happy to talk some more about it.
I'd like to tell you an interesting story, if I may. I was traveling with my wife and daughter once on an LL plane from Israel with Herman Mook, and my wife told my daughter, who was about 14 or 15 years old at the time, "That's Herman Mook. Tell him that you've read his book. Tell him that you're interested in meeting him." She went to him. He was in the first class, and we were traveling passenger class. And he said, "Have you read any of my books?" And my daughter said, "No, I only read classical books."
Okay.
Herman responded, "Well, my books are classical."
Okay, that's a good quip. He had a sense of humor about him. I think there was a part of him that always wished that he had risen to the light. Although he wasn't, he was more prudish than Roth was. So maybe that was his problem. But thank you for sharing that.
I got a question. I grew up in Toronto in the late 1950s and 1960s. My parents came to Toronto from Europe in 1950. My dad was observant. He looked at Toronto and he said, "Judaism was dead in Toronto." Okay. Now, I think that two things contributed to the Bible orthodoxy, which I don't think anybody could foresee. One was the show up nervous. We went to a big show in Toronto, and I would say that 90% of the people were show observers. The second thing, which I think helped the Bible of orthodoxy, were the Baal Shemites, like Eshet Torah and Oshamel.
Right,
And
the Baal. Right.
without that, I don't think there would have been a Bible.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I don't want to paint a picture that this was that woke is single-handedly responsible. There are a number of factors in the Renaissance that I mentioned, NCSY and Or Sameach, particularly in the 70s and 80s. Professor Kaplan is absolutely correct. I cite it in whatever I do is that Marshall Sklar, when he republishes the third republication, I believe, of conservative Judaism, he acknowledges how wrong he was about his prediction of Orthodox Judaism. He puts that in the revised introduction. A number of people did. I mentioned last week that Peter Berger had taken back his prediction that Orthodox Judaism could not withstand what he called the techno-modern society. Published towards the end of his life, that he thought the rabbinical controls in orthodoxy were really interesting. See Professor Kaplan's essay on Das Torah from a long, long ago in Rav Huttner for that one. No rebuttals. Okay. All right. Well, it's always a pleasure. I will work on the sound. I don't know what it was, and I apologize for those who somehow missed the screen. I hope you saw it. Anyway, same bad time, same bad channel next week. I'll see you then, everybody. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
My absolute